Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to episode 4 of Shadows at the Door, the podcast. My name is Mark Nixon, and if this is your first time joining us, each episode David Alt and I feature a ghost story and then discuss the ideas and themes. Well, among many tangents. Today, we have something truly special for you. We again feature not only a classic tale, but arguably one of the greatest ghost stories of all time, if not the greatest. No doubt you'll be familiar with the writer, Mr. Charles Dickens, a man who loved ghosts and the supernatural as much as he loved social commentary. Yes, today we proudly present The Signalman. The story was originally published in 1866 and has enjoyed countless reprints since then. Whether you're familiar with this chilling tale already, or this is your first time, we hope you enjoy the story of hauntings and tragedies. So, gather around the fire, pour yourself some tea, and we'll begin.
Hello! Below there! Hello! Below! Is there any path by which I can come down and speak with you? I say, is there any path? Down there? All right. Steady now. Yes, and, there we are. I say, this is a rather lonesome post to occupy, is it not? Your signal box caught my attention when I looked down from up yonder. A visitor is a rarity, I should suppose, but not an unwelcome one, I hope. I so rarely get out of the city myself, I found myself with a newly awakened interest in everything out here. And the trains are marvellous to see, at least for a man who has lived as narrow a life as I. For you, they must be almost mundane. Oh, frightfully sorry, but is there something wrong with that red light by the tunnel mouth? You've hardly averted your eyes from it. It's part of your charge, is it not?
Don't you know it is?
You look at me as if you had a dread of me.
I was doubtful whether I'd seen you before.
Where?
There.
By the red light?
Yes.
My good fellow, what should I do there? However, be that as it may, I never was there. You may swear by it.
I think I may. Yes, I'm sure I may.
Splendid. The cold coming from the tunnel causes quite the chill, does it not?
That it does, sir. It is a damp little spot. But my box is quite comfortable.
Oh, yes. And have you much to do?
Yes. That is to say, I have enough responsibility to bear. Exactness and watchfulness are required the most. Although there is a little manual work. I must change the signals, trim the lights, and turn the iron handles. But the hours can be long and lonely. As such, I read a great deal.
I should be glad of a forced enclosure in which to read. On duty, do you always stay down here, or are you at times able to escape the shadows of the bridge?
In fairer weather, I have, but I'm at all times liable to be called by the electric bell, and I find the anxiety stops me from venturing far. Perhaps, sir, you would care to join me in my box and warm yourself?
I would be most grateful.
Is the task for now.
Where were we last, sir? Please, you must stop calling me sir. We are but two gentlemen.
I would not refer to myself in that way.
Well, perhaps you would allow the title of scholar? I hope I might say without offence that you have been well educated and perhaps above your station.
That is not unusual among large bodies of men. I have heard it so in workhouses and in the police force, even the army. When young, I was a student of natural philosophy. I missed my opportunities, went down and never rose again. I have no complaint to offer. I've made my bed and I lie upon it, far too late to make another. Please understand, sir, that I claim to be nothing but what you find me. Wait.
Are you quite all right? What is it you see, man? There is no train. That's twice this evening you have interrupted yourself like that for seemingly no reason.
You do not hear it.
Hear what?
Your senses tell you nothing.
My dear friend, there is nothing to sense. You are shaking.
Yes, sir. I suppose I am all right.
Yes, well, otherwise you almost make me think I've met with a contented man.
I believe I used to be so. But I am troubled, sir. I am troubled.
With what, exactly?
It is very difficult to impart, sir. Very difficult to speak of. If ever you make me another visit, I will try to tell you.
I expressly intend to make you another visit. When shall it be?
I shall be on again at 10 tomorrow night, sir.
Then I will come at 11.
I'll show my white light, sir, till you have found the way up. When you have found it, don't call out. And when you are at the top, don't call out.
Very well.
And when you come down tomorrow night, don't call out.
Let me ask you a parting question.
What made you cry, hello, below there tonight?
Heaven knows, I cried something to that effect.
Not to that effect, sir. Those were the very words. I know them well.
I suppose they were the words. I said them, no doubt, because I saw you below.
For no other reason.
What other reason could I possibly have?
You had no feeling that they were conveyed to you in a supernatural way.
No.
And I bid you good night. Follow my light and make your way safely.
I did not call out. May I speak now?
By all means, sir.
Then here is my hand. It's good to see you again.
And here is mine, to you as well. Come, inside by the fire.
I've made up my mind. You shall not have to ask me of my troubles again. In truth, I took you for someone else yesterday evening. The person who troubles me.
Who? Does he look like me?
I don't know. I never saw the face. The left arm is always across the face. The right arm is waved violently, so. Like this. And it shouts...
For God's sake, clear the way!
One moonlit night, I was sitting here when I heard a voice cry, "Hello, below there." I started up, I looked from the door and saw someone standing by the red light near the tunnel, waving just how I have shown you. The voice seemed hoarse with shouting and it cried, "Look out, look out! Hello, below there, look out." So I took my lamp, turned it on red, and ran towards the figure, calling, "What's wrong? What's happened? Where?" But it just stood outside the blackness of the tunnel. I was so close, but the sleeve was across its eyes. I stretched out my hand to pull the sleeve away, and then it was gone.
Into the tunnel?
No. I ran on into the tunnel some 500 yards and saw nothing in the distance but the wet stains on the walls of the arch. I ran out faster than I'd run in, for I now had a mortal abhorrence of the place. And I looked all around the red light with my own red light. I looked above the arch and below and ran back here. I telegraphed both ways. An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong? The answer came back both ways. All well.
My good man, it must have been a trick of the eye. And as for the crying, do but listen to the wind in this unnatural valley while we speak so low, and to the wild harp it makes of the telegram wires.
That is all very well, but I have worked here for so long that I am very familiar with the noises of the place. But what's more, within 6 hours after the appearance, an accident happened on this line. Within 10 hours, the dead and wounded were brought along through the tunnel right over the spot where the figure had stood.
My word. But surely this is but coincidence.
No, sir. It is not. That was just a year ago. 6 or 7 months passed and I had recovered from the surprise and the shock. When one morning, as the day was breaking, I was standing by the door and looked towards the red light and saw the spectre again.
Did it cry out?
No, it was silent.
Did it wave its arm?
No, it leaned against the shaft of the light, with both hands before the face, like it was in mourning.
Did you go up to it?
I came in and sat down, partly to collect my thoughts, partly because it had made me faint. When I returned to the door, daylight had broken and the ghost was gone.
But nothing followed? Nothing came of this?
That very day, as a train came out of the tunnel, I noticed at a carriage window a confusion of what looked like hands and heads and something waved. I saw it just in time to signal the driver, "Stop." He put his brake on and the train eventually came to a stop further down the line. I ran after it, and as I did, I heard terrible screams and cries. A beautiful young lady had died instantaneously in one of the compartments. She was brought in here and laid on this very floor.
I do not know what to say.
Now, sir, mark this and judge how my mind is troubled. The spectre came back a week ago. Ever since, it has been there now and again.
At the light?
The red light, yes.
And what does it do?
It
covers its eyes with its sleeve again and waves the other arm. It shouts, "For God's sake, clear the way." I have no peace or rest of it. It calls to me for many minutes together in an agonized manner. Below there, look out, look out. It somehow rings my little bell and...
Ah, did it ring the bell yesterday evening when I was here? When you were distracted?
Twice.
Why, see how your imagination misleads you. My eyes were on the bell and my ears were open. I am a living man and I tell you that bell did not ring at all. Except, of course, when it was rung in the natural course of the other stations communicating with you.
I've never made a mistake as to that yet, sir. I have never confused the spectre's ring with that of a man's. The ghost's ring is a strange vibration in the bell that derives from nothing else. I've not asserted that the bell stirs to the eyes, and I wonder why you fail to hear it, but I heard it.
And did the spectre seem to be there when you looked out?
It was there.
Both times?
Both times.
Will you come to the door with me and look for it now?
Oh, come now.
Look, there is the red danger light. There is the dismal mouth of the tunnel. There are the trees and above us the stars. Now, do you see it?
No, it is not there.
Agreed.
I know you do not fully understand, sir, but what troubles me so dreadfully is the question, what does the spectre mean?
I'm sorry?
What is its warning? Where is the danger? What is the danger? It is not to be doubted a third time after what has gone before. But surely this is a cruel haunting. Well, what can I do?
Oh.
If I telegraph danger on either side of me or both, I can give no reason for it. I should get into trouble. They would think I was mad. Message, danger, take care. Answer, what danger, where? Message, don't know, but for God's sake, take care. What else could they do? When it first stood under the light, why not tell me where the accident was to happen? Why not tell me how it could be averted? When on its second coming, when it mourned, why not tell me instead, she is going to die, let them keep her at home? If it came on those two occasions only to show me the warnings were true and to prepare me for a third, why not warn me plainly now? And I, Lord help me, a mere poor signalman on this solitary station, why not go to somebody with credit to be believed and power to act? And...
Whatever the reason, the duty has fallen to you. Whether I am sure of my own understanding of these confounded circumstances or not, it is good that you understand the duty before you. Look, the time is rather late. Shall I stay through the night?
No. Forgive me, sir. I will not hear of it.
Are you quite sure? I do not like that red light, and I shall keep my eyes firmly on it as I ascend up the bank. I myself would not rest easy by it. I see no reason to conceal my dread, and I do not wish that solitary unease upon you.
I insist, sir, no. There is nowhere for you to find comfort here.
We cannot leave you in this state forever. Would you at least entertain the possibility of a malady? Allow me to take you to a doctor in the morning when your shift is but finished.
Perhaps, sir. Return at 9, and I shall at least accompany you into town.
Splendid. I shall make my way back now. Do not concern yourself with lighting the way again. See yourself to fire and a cup of tea, yes? Good night.
Good night, sir. Yes, a cup of tea will do for now. And perhaps a doctor may...
Oh, no.
Hello? Below there!
Look out! Look out! Hello! Below there! Look out!
Who is it? Where is the danger? What's going to happen?
Hello! Below there! Look out! For God's sake, clear the way! Hello!
Uncover your face, man, and tell me! Tell me! Let me stop it!
There is a man by the light.
Wait. He is most certainly a man of flesh and bone, and he is not alone. What on earth is going on down there? I say, hello? What's happened? What are you men gathered around? What's the matter?
Signal man killed this morning, sir.
Not the man belonging to that box.
Yes, sir.
Not the man I know.
Well, you'll recognise him if you knew him, for his face is quite composed.
How did this happen?
He was cut down by the engine, sir. No man in England knew his work better, but somehow he was not clear of the outer rail. It was just as day was breaking. He had his lamp in hand and his back to the tunnel facing the danger light. And the engine struck him down. This man was driving. He was just telling us how it happened. Tell the gentleman, Tom.
Coming round the curve in the tunnel, sir, I saw him at the end. There was no time to check speed and I knew him to be very careful. He didn't seem to take heed of the whistle, so I shut it off and called to him as loud as I could.
What did you say?
It was dreadful, sir. I never stopped calling to him, even as we were upon him. I put this arm across my eyes as not to see, and I waved to him with the other, but it was no use. I shouted, "Hello! Below there! Look out! Look out! For God's sake, clear the way!"
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
And that was The Signalman by Charles Dickens. I'm Mark Nixon, and as always, I'm joined by David Ault. Hello, David.
Hello, Mark. Wow. The Signalman by Charles Dickens.
Little known author. We've done him a favor, really, getting him on here.
Yeah, he probably hasn't had much exposure, especially around Christmas. So what made you choose The Signalman as one of the stories to go on this podcast?
Yeah, because there have been about 10 audio adaptations of The Signalman, which I chose deliberately not to listen to when writing the script as well. Quite simply, The Signalman is tied first place as my favourite ghost story of all time. It represents absolutely everything I love about the genre. It is dripping with atmosphere. I mean, when you read the story, you don't even see the ghost. You just hear it being talked about. And you see the impact of it, but you never even see it. And it was actually one of the first adult ghost stories I ever read. When I was a child, I went to the local library and I would read all of these books on strange occurrences, and it would have Bawley Rectory in it, the Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot, all this stuff.
Yep, all of the standards, all the classics, yes.
Yep, I'm still absolutely gutted that the Jersey Devil does not exist. But yes, and then I read all of these cover to cover, and then I was naturally an expert by age 8 or 9, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I just started picking up ghost stories for kids, and then eventually there was like some of the adult section, and I just came across The Signalman, and it really just ignited something in me, and I read it a couple times a year. And then, of course, which I believe you're familiar with, David, there was a terrific adaptation done by the BBC in the 70s for their ghost story for Christmas.
Yes, with what was his name, the guy who played Marcus in Indiana Jones?
I have never seen Indiana Jones.
You've never seen an Indiana Jones film?
No. I've seen, like, you know, I it's like The Exorcist. You don't need to have seen it. I've seen the bit where his face melts, and I've seen the screaming lady who I think was sleeping with Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. Yeah, so it had him in, and whilst I have seen the start of The Signalman, I haven't actually seen it all the way through, which you might find a little bit bizarre. But I do have the DVD box set of Ghost Stories for Christmas from the BBC, and it's one of those things that I keep on meaning to watch, as, you know, as we always do. It's like that old to-read list.
That's true. I'm just wondering what happened. I mean, it's not a long... It's like, what, half an hour? What happened in that
Something
time
like that.
For you to fall asleep or switch off halfway through?
You know that there are times when you want to read a book or watch a film or do something, and there are times when you're just not in the mood. And I think I must have tried switching it on when I wasn't in the mood.
Fair enough.
But now I will be able to go back with a renewed sense of appreciation for the story.
Nah, you'll just be smug. Like, well, I wouldn't have played him like that. In the BBC adaptation, they choose to show the ghost, which is an absolutely tremendous moment. In fact, they choose the image of the ghost to go on the front cover of the DVD set as well. Mm. So I thought, you know, if it's good enough for the BBC, and of course the great Lawrence Gordon Clark as well, who I once had the pleasure of being in the same room of, and I'm being too shy to speak to him, then it is good enough for me.
Yes.
Yeah. But I did choose not to seek out any existing audio adaptations of it. But ours is a very faithful adaptation of The Signalman. So if the others have chosen that route as well, then I'm
What am I saying? It all sounds the same. No, David, ours is better. Yes, no. Because, of course, the others didn't have David Ault.
So that's quite an interesting choice you made there to have the ghost in rather than just talked about. What else went into your process for adapting this?
Well, in the story, a lot of it is explained passively through the narrator. In particular, the instance where the two of them are discussing and the signalman suddenly stops to run to the door, look outside, where he sees the ghost but doesn't say that he sees it. In the original story is simply mentioned. I chose to put that in. I thought it was a really great moment as well. And in the BBC adaptation by Lawrence Gordon Clark, when the signalman is talking about the past instances that have happened, the accident where the bodies were brought through and when the lady suddenly dies, they choose to show that in theirs as well.
Mm.
And it's actually, the second instance is really bizarrely, he says, slagging off Charles Dickens. It's very bizarrely written. It's like there's a confusion of faces at the window. I saw something white and then a lady died and she was brought in. I did struggle to interpret that and I just chose to be quite literal with it. Whilst in the BBC adaptation, there is a lady hanging out of the window, screaming and waving a handkerchief, I believe. And I think she falls out and that's how she dies.
No, not quite a la the Railway Children, then.
No, not quite. But of course, this has all come from Charles Dickens' experience with trains. Of course, they were a very common and, dare I say, exciting way to travel in these times. And Charles Dickens, as you and I both know, David, loved the ladies.
Indeed, yes.
And he was having one of his affairs. He was on a train with her, and the train crashed inside of a tunnel. And I'm sure people will tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe some of the lower carriages were enveloped in flames, and he described experiencing the smell of cooking flesh, and he actually helped to get people out of the carriages and evacuate them out of the tunnel, because the tunnel, of course, was effectively becoming an oven.
Mm.
And I was at the Charles Dickens Museum in London when I actually read this bit, but I do believe that's how his affair came to light, because the press were like, oh my God, Charles Dickens is a hero. Who's this lady? Oh... that's not your wife.
Oh, yes.
I do believe that's how at least one of Charlie Boy's affairs did come out.
Mm.
I do believe he got some PTSD from that to some extent as well. And then, of course, we got the signalman. But then it is well known that a lot of Dickens' opinions and experiences, like most writers, does reflect in his writings. There is a uncomfortable amount of anti-Semitic portrayals, Fagin being probably the best example of it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he was annoyed by Cockney orphans as well.
it's funny with Charles Dickens, because one of the companies I do work for is called GCSE Pod. It produces little podcastable or a bite-sized GCSE revision guide for all subjects, which you can subscribe to through your school or individually, etc., etc. I'm not doing any advertising for them. I'm just setting the scene. And I do the English literature podcasts or pods. And so we've done a couple of Charles Dickens works. And of course, Charles Dickens, for his big novels, was doing it as a weekly or daily novelization, serialization across in the papers across a long time. And of course, he had to keep his readers hooked, but he also had to be able to spin out a tale over a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
over the length of a novel. And some of the... So sometimes we've been reading the plot summaries of these novels and you just end up going, what? Really? And this person has suddenly found treasure or has had a great uncle suddenly decide to arrive in this strange marshy pit. Yes, that's great. It works as a cliffhanger for a serialization, but not for a novel. And the names, M'Chokum Child, Mr. M'Chokum Child, where does that come from? And oh, what was it? There was the clown and his dog. I can't remember the names now, but some of the names that he comes up with are utterly bizarre.
They seem a bit literal. The clown, I imagine, is probably called Mr. Entertains Children.
Probably. Oh, but he had the dancing dog or the singing dog or something, and it was, he is one of those authors where we've seen a lot of books and things come through and plays, and we read them and we talk about the novelization and the characters and so on and so forth. Everything you'd need for a good GCSE English essay.
Mm-hmm.
Dickens is the one author where we just don't know what on earth is going on with the plot. I think because of this serialization issue and some of the, yeah, what he needs to keep his readers going. So seeing a nice short story by Charles Dickens, which, to be fair, only needs two or three characters, that's great.
Mm. And he does his twist, but speaking of these twists, you know, the one in this story is fantastic.
Mm.
It was warning him of his own death. And I wonder if it was, benevolent. Was it warning? Did he get it wrong? Was it an admin error of the spirit world? Or is it a malevolent ghost where it is reveling in warning him of his own death and being the cause of it? I choose to believe that it is a malevolent spirit. I prefer that anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's not a future echo then. These events go ripple forward and backward in time.
Yeah, I mean, that is an option as well, but I see intelligence behind it. That's just
okay.
But this is, you've got to remember, I've been reading this story since I was a kid. And yes. You know, this is probably what I've come to, and I've always had that, oh David, you've just ruined it for me. I don't know anything anymore. And I guess, you know, I once saw it as a play, and the spirit looked quite sinister as well, and that just reaffirmed what I was thinking as well.
I just figured with your love of Doctor Who and time travel that a future echo.
I loved this story before I loved Doctor Who, David.
Ah, but now with your fresh perspective as a Doctor Who lover.
That's true. It is possible. And I am going to very quickly sidestep the downfall of my beliefs to mention the marvellous episode of The Unquiet Dead where meets Charles Dickens, and he's and it's Christopher Eccleston, and he's gushing about what he loves about Dickens. And he goes, I'm not going to do the voice. He goes, I love that one with the ghost. And Dickens goes, what, A Christmas Carol? No, The Signalman. It was terrifying. But that episode, of course, was written by Mark Gatiss, who I happen to know is a very big fan of this story and the adaptation. So it is only natural. Speaking of which, I will defend Mr. Dickens, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And I will point out, I do think A Christmas Carol is a wonderfully paced novel. Which I believe wasn't serialized, which obviously explains that as well.
Well, that's probably why then.
Yeah. In fact, I think, you know, Marley's introduction in the book is extremely effective. You know, and when he's just like, he's dragging his chains that he's formed in life and the bonds that he's made towards Ebenezer, and his jaw keeps coming apart, and that's why he's got it tied. It's just absolutely brilliant. Although sometimes I still expect it to be two Muppets.
I've never seen a Muppets Christmas Carol.
What the? I've never seen Indiana Jones, and you've never seen Muppets Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell. We need to set some homework, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's actually a surprisingly faithful adaptation, I will hasten to add. I once went to a screening of it where there was a lecturer who was there talking about, out of all the adaptations, it is possibly the most faithful. In fact, there's a scene, I'm going to have to tell you this, David, because you've never bloody seen it, but there's a scene where where Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge is watching these thieves who have stolen his bedding and his bed curtains, and they're discussing what they're going to do with it, and they're laughing about how they've never felt warmth and blah, blah, blah. But the character in the book is described as having quite long spidery arms as he paws over the items. And of course, in The Muppets, it's a spider. It's a literal spider. Yeah, it's pretty good, David. What adaptations of A Christmas Carol have you seen?
Doctor Who?
That was no...
I know I've seen a couple of them, because but it's one of those things where you've seen it once, you've and it's such a well-known story that you can't really get a new take on it.
Yeah, you can, David. Muppets. Put singing watermelons in it.
I never liked the Muppets.
Oh my God. I wish I'd known this before we started this enterprise together.
Yep, afraid so. Never liked the Muppets.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I've learned something, David. You've learned something about me. Yep. There will not be a season two.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
So, okay. Yes, anyway, back to...
back to the signalman.
Mm. Well, yes, there are certainly various stories out, and it's a well-known trope, a well-known trait, that you have something from the future echoing back to the past, i.e. you it's the foreshadowing, and this can take many different forms, whether it be Anakin seeing or having the Darth Vader shadow in whatever that film was. The film that we don't talk about, well, to be perfectly honest, I don't care for the series anyway, which was probably another big bombshell for some people. Hate Star Wars.
Hate it, wow.
Or even in some of the newer things like The Haunting of Hill House, which at the time of recording has only been out for a couple of months, so we can't really spoiler it.
I wanted to spoil it, but David said no. So
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid no, you are not allowed to spoil it.
As we are inclined to go off on a tangent, David, I do think, as horror connoisseurs, I do think we need to formally endorse The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. It is...
Absolutely, yes. Watch The Haunting of Hill House. It is excellent.
Yes, it is. And it's so much more. I mean, I'm part of a few like little literary horror groups on Facebook. And there was a discussion about this recently where a great deal of the group disliked it.
Really?
They did. Well, I think they expected to go in looking for either a very straight adaptation of Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House. And we've already had a good adaptation of The Haunting of Hill House. We've also had a bad one. So, love Catherine Zeta-Jones, mate. No, I don't. But I'm not precious about adaptations. I read Spider-Man from an extremely young age, and I grew up watching all these films and the X-Men having absolutely nothing to do with the original story. So I very quickly dropped any pretense that an adaptation has to be very faithful to it. And it does baffle me when people get angry that adaptations are not beat for beat from the page. Mm. And it is very rarely done well. Netflix, A Series of Unfortunate Events, is an extremely faithful adaptation of Lemony Snicket's book series, and it's fantastic. But that's two rare things, that it is both that faithful and it is also good.
Mm. Because I think one of the issues about doing adaptations is that you will have some things that are written for a particular medium.
Yes.
And... for example, an audio drama can easily become a film, but a film can't necessarily become an audio drama.
Yes.
Because there's the element of sight that suddenly disappears, and you have to try and get over various things that you would normally let the viewer see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, look, there is a woman on the ceiling behind you, leering down scarily. You can't do that in audio. You can do that on film easily, but you can't do it easily on audio.
I mean, that would still be pretty shit dialogue though, David, wouldn't it?
Exactly. It would, really. But there are some things that were written for a time and a particular audience at that time,
mm-hmm.
and B, a medium. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure if Charles Dickens had set out to write whatever serialization as one full-length novel, rather than having to leave cliffhangers at the end of every chapter, then it would have been a much different book.
Mm-hmm.
But there is always the context of how and when and why things are written. So an adaptation can't really hope to be as faithful to its original medium without recreating all of the other things as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do a Christmas carol, yes, you could set it with in Victoriana with and do it all like that. But then you've got to think, well, how long do we want it? What's the audience? And why are we doing this? And who's watching? All of these questions then come into play to then change the script. Do we keep it word for word, the dialogue the same as Charles Dickens wrote it? Will it make sense to a modern audience? Mm-hmm. Will it be relevant to a modern audience? Are there fat cats that are draining their workers dry and just getting rich off the back of it? Well, I suppose that might be one thing that could translate over. But, you know, it's that idea of context and making and putting it for an audience, not necessarily pandering to the audience as well. Mm-hmm. It's not making difficult source material relevant just by dumbing it down, for instance. Because I think audiences are, for the most part, a lot more intelligent than the people in charge of making the decisions at film studios would give them credit for.
Mm-hmm. I do think this is where Netflix gets it right. They hire people with a particular vision and they trust them to do it. And you know, often their shows look quite different. I mean, the Marvel shows have all blended in together, and those are their problems. But very, very much agree with what you're saying. And also, when I see an adaptation, I want to see something new brought to it as well. Going back to Hill House, I mean, it is as much as a story about a family, and it is a story about mental health and post-traumatic stress. And I won't go on anymore. But it's more about that than it is also about literal ghosts. And I think some people have been prevented from enjoying that because they were too busy looking for the straight adaptation. And yes, there were characters who were named after characters in the book and things like that, and then that's a little wink to those smug bastards watching it. I think we need to be challenged by adaptations, definitely. And certainly I really think you should, once you finish listening to Shadows at the Door, the podcast, you should definitely watch The Haunting of Hill House. And you know what? While you're at it, watch A Series of Unfortunate Events as well, because that's just terrific. Really is good. And then join us next week for David and I's Doctor Who podcast that we're apparently being pulled toward like a black hole.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm really glad that everybody has. I mean, I wonder how many people who heard this today, was that their first experience of The Signalman? And that's quite exciting. You know, have they never read or seen it before? And if it was, I really hope you enjoyed it. It is one of the best ghost stories of all time, if not the best. It depends what day it is. I'll call it the best or not. The other, of course, being Old Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad by M.R. James. And if it wasn't the first time watching it, I do hope that we brought something a little bit new to it. Certainly Nico's music as well. I absolutely adore working with Nico because he just brings something really tremendous to each story as well. And David, as again, and I'm not just complimenting David because I have to, because I'm British and I complimented somebody else, although that is certainly is true. But again,
I'm sitting here fuming. That's I just warning you.
I've got him on the webcam and I can see steam coming off him. But you know, I edit these when I edit them together as well, and I can't believe it's the same guy doing all of them as well. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. It was such a pleasure to adapt this one, and thank you very much for joining us. So I think that's it for today, David, isn't it?
I think it is. Yes, thank you, Mark, for the adaptation.
Thank you, and join us next week for more pleasing terrors.
Join us then. Good night.
You've been listening to a Shadows at the Door production. Story by Charles Dickens, adapted by Mark Nixon. Performances by David Alt. Music by Nico Vertese. Editing by Mark Nixon. Copyright held by Shadows at the Door Publishing. If you enjoyed this production, please consider leaving a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll see you very soon.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.